Good morning again, Your Honors. For the record, I'm Chip Dix on behalf of Lamar Company. And to the point of the last question, if you were to reverse and enter judgment for Lamar and the Shires on the last case, then that would move the variance case. But otherwise, if there were some actions, if it was remanded back to the circuit court for further proceedings, then that would not move the variance case. The variance case is much more factually intense than the declaratory judgment case. And I anticipate that the court has read our briefs and understands the facts, so quite frankly, I'm going to skip over that as opposed to making a presentation. I would focus on the standard for review, which was one of our errors, and everybody agreed, the BZA, the zoning administrator, the trial court, the city, everybody agreed that the city charter and Lamar and Shias, who were party to the case at that time, everybody agreed that the city charter was the proper body of law and also the proper standard for review. At the same time, you will see in the BZA transcript there was a combination of using the state statute and the city charter. Then likewise, when we got to the trial court's order specifically confused a number of issues, not only the issue about what standard was appropriate, but threw in the fairly debatable test, which obviously wasn't applicable. And when you look at the last part of the trial court's letter opinion, it says you've got to comply with the 15.2 provisions, the state code, and you have to meet the fairly debatable test, which obviously the fairly debatable test does not apply. I think the most appropriate position for this case, and I would respectfully request that this court remand the BZA case back to this trial court for two reasons. One is to apply the appropriate standard of review and the appropriate body of law. And the second is we've got this issue about necessary parties. And the necessary party issue, which we discussed at the writ panel, was, you know, a little bit of a difficult issue to resolve. You've got the city charter, the city charter applies, that doesn't have the landowner as a necessary party, as a requirement. It is substantially different in a different body of law than what is contained in the state code. In the 2010 General Assembly...
But the necessary party issue is raised in the appellate context, not down there. You had everybody down there.
We did.
So we're here on appeal, and the statutes that relate to appeal do not require the joining of those parties.
I would concur.
So the necessary party issue is not really a problem here. It might be a problem there, but you didn't have that problem there.
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, this is fascinating. We've got a demur that's granted on something that wasn't asked for, and then a variance decided on a standard that doesn't exist.
I understand, Your Honor, and the concern that the fairly debatable test came out of right field. And obviously, the appropriate standard, as this court has decided for years and years, is you apply the statutory standard. And in this case, when you look at the BZA standard, the BZA standard is dramatically different from the statutory standard. First of all, under the city charter, the BZA has a duty to grant a variance, which obviously, being a landowner and the tenant council in this case jumped out at me that there's a duty on the part of the BZA to grant a variance as opposed to what the state statute says. I've tried hundreds of variance cases and BZA cases in my career, and I can tell you that getting a variance is a very, very difficult thing. Overturning a variance is a very, very difficult thing, as everybody in this court knows. And so I'm mindful of that, but when I look at the city charter and says it's got a duty, and then it provides some alternatives, and then just a few years before, the same Richmond City BZA grants a variance to one of Lamar's competitors to build a brand new billboard, when in this case, the city destroyed its own code enforcement records in 1988, according to the record, and as a result of which, there's no proof except for this one building permit that doesn't have a blank for a height. And so that's the only official record in this entire case, and we've been at this for 15 years. As you point out. And what's happened over the last 15 years is we've been in litigation mode, we've been in negotiation mode, we've been in resolution mode, and then we're back in litigation mode. And so What we've tried to do on behalf of Lamar is to bring this case to conclusion, and we thought we would with a declaratory judgment action. This BZA case, and we suggested that the trial court try the declaratory judgment case, let the declaratory judgment case determine the outcome. And if we won on the declaratory judgment case, then we wouldn't have to deal with all the detail and the facts in the variance case. But that wasn't the decision of the city attorney and the trial court, so we have these two cases before you.
Mr. Dix, the history of this thing is starting to look a little bit like Bleak House. I mean, this is going on forever. But there is a question I'd like to ask you about the history. 1976, the height limit for structures in the city of Richmond was 100 feet. In 1977, the building permit that you refer to was granted, and it has no, it says 60 by 20 by 4 feet by 9 inches, and that presumably is the catwalk that allows people to get to it. There isn't any height. And then also in 1997, the city changed its ordinance and changed it to 45 feet. So my question for you, and I don't know the answer, maybe you do, was the ordinance changed before or after February 3rd, 1977, when the permit was issued?
Mr. Justice Lemons, to the best of my knowledge, the ordinance in effect at the time allowed, and I believe it had changed from the 100 feet, to a provision that allowed a setback that if you were X number of feet from every foot you were back from the property line, you were able to raise the height of your sign, on-premises or off-premises sign, or your building and structure for on a two-for-one basis. And the trial record is full of references to back in the 1999 proceeding. And by the way, that was a question of an order of the zoning administrator, a determination of the zoning administrator, that this ordinance provision about a two-for-one setback increase in the height did not apply. And there was also a question of whether the height, since the height under the ordinance was not defined as to whether you determined it was from the ground or from the bridge, the James River Bridge, there had to be a rationale as to why a 96-foot billboard was built in 1977 with a building permit, with a standard operating procedure of the city coming out and inspecting the building or structure after it was built. For it to sit there for 22 years and all of a sudden somebody said, oh yes, this billboard is double the size it's supposed to be. Something happened in that process. We don't know what it was, again, because the records were destroyed. So what we tried to suggest was there were rationales upon which the city could have approved that building permit in 1977. But I believe that the 100-foot had changed to a 45-foot plus a setback for a height bonus based upon, you know, setbacks from the property. And in this case, we submitted in the original proceedings a survey from Timmons Engineers showing that we met the two-for-one setback for a billboard that could be 97 feet
high. But in many respects, that's relitigating a case that's already been decided, isn't it? I mean, in 1999, the BZA said, well, the zoning administrator and then the BZA said it was illegal. And then the Circuit Court of the City of Richmond in 2000 said it was illegal. And then it was appealed here, and we didn't grant the writ. So I guess in some respects, it's sort of irrelevant. You've got a judgment that was entered in the Circuit Court of the City of Richmond with a writ denied here that structure was illegal when it was constructed.
I would, from counsel's perspective, I would say that what Judge Marco said in that case was that he could not determine that the zoning administrator was plainly wrong or applied the wrong law. And while, and I'm not trying to parse hairs with Your Honor, but there is a big difference between saying that something is illegal and a judge saying, I can't determine based upon the standard for review that the zoning administrator was plainly wrong or applied the wrong law.
Plainly wrong in doing what?
Pardon?
Plainly wrong in doing what? And saying it was illegal.
Well, I would suggest in terms of plainly wrong that when you looked at the law, there was no definition of how high where you calculated the height of the billboard. there was a provision of this two-for-one setback.
Well, no, you don't have to go into that. I'm just saying plainly wrong as to what? You said the court determined that the administrator was not plainly wrong. And I'm saying plainly wrong in deciding what?
I think, Your Honor, that the standard for review at the time on a zoning administrator's determination was that the same standard that applies for variances today, which is that the BZA or the zoning administrator has to be plainly wrong or applied the wrong erroneous principles of law, applied the wrong law. As Your Honor knows, that standard has been changed by the General Assembly for zoning administrator determinations for a variety of different reasons, and now it's a preponderance of the evidence. But if that was the standard at the time, was plainly wrong or applied the wrong law.
And using that standard, they decided that that billboard was illegal.
Mr. Justice Clemens, I would agree with you that there was no evidence in the record based upon the building permit that height was permitted in 1977 when Tally Sign built the sign.
Well, one thing's for sure, if this goes back, the pleas and bar are going to address these kinds of questions. And your position apparently is that the vested rights statute trumps that judgment. I don't know whether it does or not, but I'm not sure we have to decide in this case.
I understand, Your Honor.
Counsel, I have a question. Going back to the fairly debatable issue.
Yes.
Didn't the trial court also recite the correct standard right after the fairly debatable standard?
The trial court, Your Honor, did cite the correct standard if the statute applies. And the question is, again, whether the city charter or the statute applies. But in the very last paragraph of the trial judge's decision, he says, and I quote, as the BZA determination comes to the court presumed to be correct, which, by the way, is not in the city charter, upon judicial review and for the foregoing reasons, as the board's decision can be said to be fairly debatable, the outcome must be upheld.
Right. Well, there's no question he cites the wrong standard, but I think he also cites the right standard and then makes his conclusion.
Madam Justice, I would observe that he cited the wrong standard in the body of the opinion, then he cited the correct standard, and then at the end he recites the fairly debatable standard, which I would suggest to you is a clear indication that he considered the fairly debatable standard to be somewhat of a predominant part of his decision.
Counsel, can I ask you this question? Do we have to determine which law applies, either the statute or the ordinance, to get to your question about the fairly debatable?
Your Honor, you would not. Okay. The fairly debatable standard is not applicable
in any event.
On any event.
So intertwined, your argument would be that we don't have to even get to the proper law.
That is correct.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Call the next case, please.